This is Lake Effect from 89.7 WUWM, Milwaukee's NPR. Thanks for joining us. I'm Mitch Teich.
And I'm Bonnie North. President Trump delivered his first State of the Union address on Tuesday night, a little more than a year after he took office. The president sought to give himself and his administration credit for the improving U.S. economy and the tax overhaul passed in the last year.
He also laid out his plan for the year ahead, seeking to tie a solution to the DACA program to increased border security and calling for a comprehensive infrastructure plan. Lily Gorin joins us in the studio now. She's a professor of political science and global studies at Carroll University. Welcome back to the show.
Thanks, Mitch. Happy to be here.
Well, let me ask you this. A lot of analysts today are talking about the tone of President Trump's speech, or at least some key parts of it. And by that, they're talking about the calls for bringing the country together. How do you see that tone and that message in the context of the president's first year in office?
Well, I mean, a State of the Union address is playing to a number of audiences. And part of what you saw last night is he's pitching a speech to the people in the audience immediately in front of him in Congress. And so there was a call to bipartisanship with regard to Democrats and Republicans who were sitting in front of him on a couple of policy areas. He was also pitching it to the people who are watching at home. And the people who are watching it at home tend to be partisans of whoever's giving the speech. And so in that regard, it was certainly not a traditional Trump stump speech that he gives to his base in, an airplane hangar someplace in Kentucky or Alabama or Ohio or Arizona. But it certainly was not necessarily a speech that everybody in the United States watched. State of the Union addresses have been declining in ratings, and there is definitely a partisan skew. Democrats watch President Obama. Republicans tuned out. Republicans are watching President Trump. Democrats are tuning out.
It's hard to imagine that there's anybody that was watching the speech whose mind was not already made up about the president.
Generally speaking, that's probably correct.
Well, so if President Trump is by most measures an unconventional president, did this feel to you like a pretty conventional kind of address?
It was a fairly conventional State of the Union address. And again, this is the second time we've seen President Trump in the well of the House. He gave a speech to the joint session of Congress, which was not technically a State of the Union address last year. And so, again, this is a different kind of setting than we usually see him in terms of speaking broadly and to a degree without necessarily a, quote, fan base. Certainly there were applause lines and lots of them, but it's not the same as giving a campaign rally speech. So it was a conventional speech delivered by, as you say, an unconventional type of president.
Well, and from a rhetorical standpoint, there are some who are saying Donald Trump's first year in office could have gone much differently had this been his consistent approach.
Yeah. I would probably suggest that that is, in fact, the case. And certainly the speech last year that he gave, he almost immediately stepped on the reception of it with regard to a number of tweets that followed. So part of the discussion at the moment is whether or not the sort of trajectory of the speech, the discussion of the policy implications of what was discussed in the speech, will that have the opportunity to roll out over days, or will it be lost in a variety of other potential news flashes that come either from Trump's Twitter feed or other controversies.
Saying one thing in the State of the Union address and tweeting another.
Yep.
The speech, of course, comes at the beginning of what will likely be another intense election year. The midterm elections are about 9 months away. How does a speech like this set the election year in motion?
Well, State of the Union addresses, generally speaking, are opportunities for presidents to outline budget priorities, policy priorities that they want Congress to take up. And to some degree, in an election year, you have a really condensed window to do some of that kind of work, because Republicans and Democrats are going to be positioning themselves for the midterms, and they're not necessarily going to want to spend all that much time making a lot of deals. And so one of the difficulties with regard to this speech, there was clarity with regard to his immigration policy proposal, which is to some degree the same one that he laid out last week. But with regard to a lot of the other areas, things like the opioid crisis and paid maternity leave, paid family leave. There wasn't a lot of detail. And so for Congress to take up those issues during an election year, usually there has to be much more of an impetus from the White House.
Why do you think the Democratic Party chose Massachusetts Congressman Joe Kennedy to deliver the response?
He's young. I'm going to go with he's young.
yeah, he looked like, honestly, about 12.
He's young. And, you know, he's a Kennedy. So to some degree, there's a brand name association with it. It's a thankless job. We've had lots of Democrats and Republicans kind of have a really difficult time with this response. You cannot recreate the grandeur and symbolic nature of a president standing in front of Congress with the vice president and the Speaker of the House behind him. It just is kind of a thankless task. And one wonders if at a certain point the opposition party will give it up, except that it's an opportunity to get, you know, usually about 20 minutes of airtime and somewhat of an audience.
Democrats in recent years have been a little reluctant to put the Northeast front and center as the face of the party, but as you say, the response is always kind of taken with a grain of salt.
Yeah, and again, it was, you know, it's a Kennedy, so there's brand connection there. Young Kennedy that many people don't know. He's a third term congressperson from a sort of a more industrial and mechanized area of Massachusetts. Fall River is really a kind of not necessarily advanced part of the state in terms
of— This is not Cambridge.
It's certainly not Cambridge, Massachusetts. It's not Boston, and it's not necessarily the 128 corridor. And so there was, you know, the symbolic sort of situation where he's framed in an auto shop at a technical college with an audience. And I actually think that the audience was helpful in terms of the delivery of the speech, because a lot of these are just without an audience in front of a camera, and it's very awkward.
Well, you know, with the setting of that speech in mind, and thinking back to the State of the Union address itself, did you see anything in either of these speeches you thought would resonate especially well in Wisconsin?
Again, there's a discussion with regard to infrastructure in the president's speech. There's been a lot of discussion for the entire first year of the Trump administration with regard to infrastructure package. In the speech a year ago, he talked about $1 trillion budget. Now it's $1.5 trillion budget, I believe. And this is, again, stuff that we're talking about in Wisconsin with regard to our transportation budget, with regard to development around the Foxconn deal. There's a lot of interest across the country with regard to infrastructure. But one of the difficulties I think that the Trump administration has had with this is that they haven't put a lot of form to what exactly that $1.5 trillion will be directed towards. And so in Wisconsin, I want to know if we're going to finish some of the road packages that are halfway constructed, because I spend time driving to Waukesha.
So for a guy who expresses himself a lot in tweets, which are fairly limited in length, this was a pretty long speech.
It was a very long speech. It was a long speech in delivery, although apparently not as long a speech in words. It was all, I think it was about an hour and a half delivery. And there were many applause lines, which again slows down a president's speech, particularly in this format. But I think the count was about 5,600 words, less than 6,000 words. And it came in as the second or third longest speech that has been sort of timed behind Bill Clinton, who always was long.
I knew what you expected. But yeah.
So it seemed like they were 3 or 4 hours long. But it wasn't as long in words as Bill Clinton's longer State of the Union address, which were closer to 9 and 10,000 words. So it was a sort of a slow delivery in terms of enunciating and articulating the words and taking pauses. And again, some of them were applause pauses, but it was definitely a longer speech.
Anything else about this speech that jumped out at you that you're not really hearing pundits talk about in the wake of it?
I was not necessarily confused, but I was intrigued by paid family leave that was dropped into the speech. And I understand this is something that Ivanka Trump has been advocating for. There was no discussion of it, but it was in the speech. There was also a discussion, or at least, again, a line with regard to criminal justice reform, but that, again, didn't have a lot of discussion around it. And one of the sort of concerning points in this speech was this comment with regard to giving cabinet secretaries the power to essentially fire people who are in the civil service, which would be a really dramatic change with regard to how the civil service works. And it would potentially change our system of sort of the executive branch in general.
To something more political patronage related.
Yeah, which we had in the 1800s, but we haven't had that in a substantial way since a lot of the civil service reforms during the various Roosevelt administrations.
A couple of interesting omissions as well. No references to the Russia meddling investigation.
Nope.
And no references to the Me Too movements.
Nope. No Me Too.
Well, Lily Gorin, thanks for helping us talk about what was in the speech and what was not in the speech. And I'm sure we will talk with you again.
My pleasure. Thanks for having me today.
Lily Gorin is a professor of political science at Carroll University in Waukesha. You can find more of NPR's coverage of the State of the Union Address and the Democratic Response at WUWM.com.